Operations Reform Technology and Elections Committee to order. And the first bill on the agenda is Senate File 463, Representative Hortman. Representative Hortman, hang on one second. Representative Hortman, did we move this to the floor, or does this have to go to Finance?
Mr. Chair, I don't know the answer to that question. I think we should move it to the floor.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative House.
I believe it's a fee and not a tax.
Thank you, Representative House. I see the rules debate has already begun. If there is a fee involved in this, it would have to go to Finance, Representative.
Mr. Chair, the fee would be charged by the notary public and would not be deposited in the treasuries of the state of Minnesota. So,
And Representative Portman, that's the argument you should probably make to the Chair of Finance.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to go to the Finance.
Representative Portman, I'm going to move that House File, Senate File 463 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to the Finance Committee. And you can explain to the Chair of Finance that one. So with that, welcome to the committee, and would you please present your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is a really simple bill. It refers to the fee that notaries may charge for notarizing documents, and currently the fee is $1, and the bill would propose to increase that to $5. However, I do have an amendment, and I worked with Mark Shepard on that this morning. And the amendment would be to delete everywhere where it says $5 and insert 4% of the fee for recording a notary commission established in Minnesota Statute 357.021, Subdivision 2.
Representative Hartman, why don't you repeat that, and we'll have Mr. Greiling take it down in case we don't have a paper copy of it. Or do you have a copy of it?
I have a copy of it.
So, Representative Hartman, would you go over it one more time, please? You don't have it anymore.
Well, that's fine. No, I can remember it, though.
Representative Hartman, we're going to have Mr. Greiling go over it.
We'll
have, I'm sorry, did I say Greiling? That's what I get for reading the Star Trib this morning, editorial page. Mr. Gehring, I'm sorry, Mr. Gehring. I apologize for that.
I'm sure
there's many ways I apologize for that. All right, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I believe this amendment then is, line 1.9, 1.10, 1.12, 1.13, 1.15, 1.19. Delete $5 and insert 4% of the fee for recording a notary commission established in Minnesota Statutes 357.021, Subdivision 2.
That's the amendment.
Sorry. Representative Hartman, and then members, does everyone have that? Understand what we're doing here, substituting on those lines?
Well, Mr.
Representative Hilty, I just want to, first of all, get to what we're doing and then an explanation of it. So the next would be, why are we doing this?
Mr. Chair, right now the fee for becoming a notary is $100. And so 4% of the fee for becoming a notary would be $4. why are we changing it to 4? Mr. Chair, I'd like to introduce Lona Shriver from Anoka County.
And Representative Hartman, this is why it's going to Finance.
Mr. Chair, I'm looking forward to the conference committee of Senator Betzold and myself.
I hope it's only you two. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. My name is Lona Shriver. I'm the intergovernmental coordinator for Anoka County, and this issue was brought to us by our staff of Vitals and License Bureau when the commission fee was raised by the legislature a couple years ago from 25 to 100. And just from a good government standpoint, I suggested to Representative Portman that instead of just having a dollar amount in the statute, you have a percentage of the commission fee. And so if you chose to adopt this amendment and it would be 4% of the $100 that the legislature raised, then the maximum that could be charged would be $4. So that would always have flowed in the statute without you folks having to come back and looking at dollar amounts. If you choose to increase the commission fees for future years, that was the only purpose. The bill is fine the way it stands. If the committee is comfortable with it that way.
Mr. Schreiber, could you move that mic closer?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Just so
Chairman.
We can hear you. Thank you. There's a paper copy of the amendment, and if Representative Hortman and Ms. Schreiber would get a copy of it, just so we can confirm that this is indeed the amendment. Mr. Shepard's here now. Representative Kahn.
Well, Representative Hortman and Ms. Schreiber, why not 5% instead of 4%? 5% is a much, 5 is a much better number than 4. It's a prime.
Whichever one of you wants to answer that, we're now in the realm of, let's be careful. Ms. Schreiber or Representative Hortman, you want to tell us why 5 is better than 4?
No, they said 4 is better. I said 5 is better.
Well, I'm going, and I don't do this very often, Representative Kahn, but I'm going with you.
Mr. Chair, I would like to incorporate Representative Kahn's suggestion in my amendment, and at line 2, change the 4 to 5. They spelled out 4. To 5.
All right, let's do this. What we're going to do here is, did we really have an amendment before us? We didn't. So what I will do is, on the MSHRD amendment, I will move the amendment, and I will incorporate your suggestion of deleting 4, F-O-U-R, and inserting 5, F-I-V-E,
good.
On line 2, and I will move that amendment so that we have it before us. It hasn't been voted on yet. I want to make that clear. All right, so that amendment is before us. Representative Howes is beginning to look like he has something he wants to say. No. All right. So the amendment's before us. Any further discussion on the amendment? Representative Broad.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm wondering how this relates to the cost of doing business for these folks.
Ms. Schreiber?
Mr. Chairman, members, in the private sector, the cost for counties or in the private sector, there are private notaries as well, as we know, in banks and real estate folks and attorneys. They can embed those costs much easier than the cost of doing business and the fees that they charge to their customers. But the counties and local units of government can't embed them in the same way. And in many cases at our county, at our government center, we provide it as a public service to people just off the street, and we're willing to do that. Some of these documents our people must notarize take up to 15 minutes to process. They get very complicated, and I have Ms. Anderson from our shop to explain that further if you're interested. It takes more training, knowledge, and care in processing these documents, and we look at it as a public service. If you have 15 minutes of an employee's time processing documents, we're paying that employee, we have benefits, we have overhead, and this isn't at all going to be a moneymaker. It's just that it's just a small recognition of the increase in the fees. It's costing the local units of government more money to provide the service than actually we'd be getting on the fees. Now, perhaps you could tell us with your department, Susan, how many notary services you do within a year. That would be good.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Susan Anderson with Anoka County. I supervise vital statistics and oversee License Bureau administration, where we do prep public notaries. And in 2006, we did 1,700 notaries. And those include one-page notarizations, just verifying someone's ID, verifying that they signed the document, to several pages of going through a document, making sure there aren't blanks, looking at the documentation provided by the customer that's as much as foreign documentation. So we are looking at fraud issues as well when we're looking at these, which can take some time. And we have to purchase books that help us with fraud identification, including state books that we have to renew yearly and international books, so that we're on top of what's the latest identification. With real ID changes, that means that states sometimes have two or three different driver's licenses, and we're not dealing with international documents as often, but when we do, there's more ability for fraud in that case. So we want to stay on top of those IDs. So it takes a little bit of time to research what the ID is, as well as going through the document and making sure there aren't any blanks or left open. Make sure you're getting all the places where they need to have it signed.
Mr. Chair and Representative Broad, I did want to also note, in 2003, the notary fee was increased from $25 to $100, the filing fee, and there was no corresponding increase in the fees that notaries could charge. So their cost of becoming a notary went up by four.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Portman, that's what I was trying to get at. I mean, if you saw that fee increase from $25 to $100, it only takes 18 people to make up those dollars. And so if you're looking at 1,700 transactions, you just have a $6,800 increase in terms of what's coming back into that organization. So if your goal is to make up the $75, then this goes far and above that.
Ms. Anderson?
It requires in each of our offices to have more than one notary to do service for customers. My office, for instance, there's three people. And I have this instance pending for tomorrow. I have one person on vacation, another person that might not be able to come in because of the weather. I can't just have one notary in that office. I have to have all three of us be public notaries to serve our customers. So there's that issue at every office that we have and throughout the state. You can't have just one public notary. So there are several people in an office that you need for customer service to become notaries. And again, in just the license centers and vital statistics, we have 26 notaries. So you're looking at that fee increase in 2003 that we pay every 5 years. That's a substantial amount to maintain public notaries for the customers. And again, it is customer service that we are trying to provide here.
Any further questions to the amendment? Representative Morgan was first. Sorry, Representative. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Schreiber, is it?
Yes.
I read from the language of the bill here that this is a maximum fee, and you seem to suggest in your response that there were some things you provide as a public service, and what I hear when you say that is that you do it free of charge. Is it true that you have been providing some of these very simple 30-second notaries, verifying an ID, for instance, or that you signed something? Have you been providing those free of charge, and would you plan to continue providing the simple services free of charge?
Mrs. Schreiber?
Mr. Chairman, members, the county's... when they establish fees for services, it's required by statute that we have a hearing and list out all the fees that the county proposes to charge. The notary fee was not on that hearing because it was always just a dollar. It was minimal. And talking to our finance people, our county board now, if this bill were to become law, would look at how much they feel the notary fee could be, since there's a up to amount in this bill. Susan tells me that sometimes she can tell when somebody comes to the window that this they can't even afford, that they don't have the dollar, and she has reached in her purse and paid for it herself. There are some activities that are property tax windows that the fee is waived in a sense because they're recording another document and it's all part of that recording process. And I've talked just an informal survey with other counties. Some counties don't charge at all. Just depends on their volume, and I think it depends on your location and how accessible you are to your citizens. It isn't a moneymaker, I can assure you. and we view it as a service. But our county board, if this bill were to pass, our county board would now have to review and set what that fee would be. And this would be true for all counties and local units of government.
Representative Murray. And Representative Hilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Shriver, or someone, my question is, who pays the commission fee and who gets the fee collected for the service?
Mr. Shriver.
Mr. Chairman, in the public sector, the county board, the city council pays the commission fee for their employees, and then they receipt the money back into the general fund of the entity. It's not pocketed by the individuals at all. It's all paid for with public money, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, and receipted back into the public coffers.
Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I didn't expect that it was pocketed by the individuals, but I did have a inkling that perhaps the individuals were paying the commission fee.
Sir. Any further? Yes, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my professional world, we use notaries all the time in real estate and closings, and they just stamp documents like crazy at the closing and pop, 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 because they go filed that way. I would really suggest you just leave it at the dollar amount. If you go into a closing and try to explain 4% of the fee and then have to tell them the story that the fee is $100 is just, that's over the top. It'd just be simpler just to say $5 or $10, put a number on it, and let's go, because I'm sure that in real estate we notarize as many documents as the counties ever dream of. So,
Representative Peterson, the discussion is on the amendment to the bill that's before us. So. Representative Hortman.
Mr. Chair, I do recall now why we selected 4%. The $1 fee was 4% of the $25 filing commission, and so the...
No,
it isn't.
Rep. Sam Kahn, let's go through the chair. Rep. Sam Hartman.
Okay. Well, I was thinking that it was. Is that it's one?
Well, Rep. Sam Hartman, the amendment you have before us.
It is. So, Mr. Chair, the idea was to keep the proportionality the same. If the filing fee is $25, then a notary may charge $1 to notarize the document. If we quadruple the filing fee, then the rationale was to keep it proportional to the $1 as to the $25 would be $4 as to the $100. That's why the 4% was in there. And so just in terms of proportionality, when we're looking at changing portions of statute that are in dollar amounts, we have to keep coming back and altering that, whereas when we list a percentage, it's self-adjusting, so that next time the legislature would decide to change the filing fee for notaries, this portion would not have to be looked at again. It would self-adjust.
Further discussion to the amendment? No further discussion on the amendment. Then all those in favor of MSHRD with the deletion of 4 on line 2, F-O-U-R, to 5, F-I-V-E, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion prevails. The bill is amended. Any further discussion to the bill? Seeing no further discussion, then I'll renew my motion that House file, I'm sorry, this is a Senate file, 463, be recommended to pass and be referred to Finance. All those in favor,
aye.
Signify by saying aye. Any opposed, nay?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is the most exciting bill I have this legislature.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Mr. Chair, is this for re-election bill?
Maybe her office. She got an offer of the to the students to the governor and leadership of all costs.
Someday this will happen.
Yeah.
I've been working to repair relationships.
All right, Representative Pulaski, you have a bill before us.
Members of the committee, thank you. I'd like to move House File 1036 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Registry. Members, Mr. Chairman and members, this bill comes to us at the request of the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits based on a 2006 ruling by the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board on the activities of groups that would lobby on constitutional amendments. And as a result of their ruling, it would change dramatically how particularly nonprofits, but basically anyone who is lobbying on constitutional amendments would function. So this changes the law so that these groups would function as they have in the past, and they would not have to create political action committees and go through that process. I've got Marcia Abner with me to explain the purpose of the bill. I know of no opposition to the bill. The various groups that lobby in the legislature, it is my understanding, all support this change. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to have Ms. Abner to explain why the nonprofits are with us.
Ms. Abner, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself.
Thank you. My name is Marcia Abner. I'm the Public Policy Director at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. The Council of Nonprofits is a statewide association. We have over 1,700 nonprofit organizations as our members. And this was a situation that put public charities, 501c3 nonprofits, in a difficult situation. When the ruling was made in 2006 that lobbying at the legislature for or against the placement of any measure on the ballot needed to be reported as a political activity through a political action fund, it created some very serious concerns in the 501c3 community. And this is not a partisan issue. This is an issue of the limitations on nonprofit political activity. The IRS, which regulates nonprofit lobbying at the federal level, has always held that lobbying on any ballot initiative is lobbying per se, not political activity. During the legislative session, we are lobbying members of the legislature. During the period of time when something is on the ballot, we are lobbying the general public. The period of time that we're trying to cover with this measure is the period of time when a measure is in front of the legislature. We're asking that lobbying, whether it be for a change of statute or a ballot initiative, all be considered very straightforward lobbying, reported as lobbying expenditures. And here's the problem. C3 organizations are not allowed to do anything partisan, and any thought of political activity is chilling to organizations. We're not allowed to have political action committees. That's prohibited by law. We could conceivably create political action funds, but those of you who serve on the boards of nonprofits know how chilling it would be for a nonprofit board to have to create a political action fund, report that on the 990 to the IRS, and be suspected of engaging in political activity. So we are hoping that this very simple and elegant measure will make it possible for nonprofits, when they are engaged in activity here at the legislature, may report their activity as regular lobbying expenditures. We've worked with a wide array of organizations on this. We've asked that it be retroactive to January 1st. I think that's included as the date, because there are, as you know, groups already working here at the Capitol, and they want to be sure that they're clear and appropriate in their reporting of their lobbying expenditures. So we're hoping that this is a simple and elegant solution. I would welcome questions from you. As the author identified, we've had support from a broad array of organizations, and in fact, the Family Council would like us to even go further and make lobbying right up to Election Day. But this is really for the period when we are at the legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Abner. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Pawlowski or Ms. Abner, it's not clear to me from the... Yeah. We don't have much context here in the bill, and it's not clear to me how this actually accomplishes what you intend. Could you explain that a little bit further?
Representative Hilty, I think what I'm going to do is have staff explain. You have in your packet a couple of explanations, but let's have Mr. Guerin go over it.
Mr. Guerin?
All right, Mr. Chair. I believe you should have all the bill summary now in front of you, which kind of lays out some of the context for this bill. Basically, what the bill does is changes the definition in Chapter 10A of promoting or defeating a ballot question by taking out lobbying activities from that definition. And the effect of that is to change the way that phrase is used in different parts of Chapter 10A, which includes specifically in 10A.20, it talks about filing campaign reports when you're working to approve or defeat a ballot question. There's a similar reference in 10A.12. So basically what it's saying is that if you're lobbying the legislature to pass a bill that would put a constitutional amendment on ballot, then that doesn't require you to file a campaign report. It still requires lobbyists to file that as lobbying expenses, but it wouldn't count as sort of a campaign expense because it's not a campaign.
Representative Hilty?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, then I think the question is, if a nonprofit wish to increase its lobbying activities, wouldn't that be accomplished simply by getting someone to sponsor the bill to put a question that otherwise might just be presented as an ordinary bill rather as a constitutional amendment?
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, it should not make any difference. The lobby limits set for nonprofits under the IRS 1976 lobby law and the 1990 rules already put a very clear cap on the amount of expenditure that any 501c3 may experience in their lobbying activity. And what we're arguing is that nonprofit corporations, like other corporations, by the way, should be allowed to consider this all a lobbying expenditure and not have to create a political action fund, which is perceived by nonprofit boards and staff as creating a chilling effect on their activity and on perhaps triggering an IRS audit, because reporting on a 990 that you have created a political action fund could be very exciting, I think, to those reviewing those 990s. And so what we're trying to do here is make sure that nonprofits, as other corporations, can simply report this as a lobbying expenditure. And some of this is explained in the material that we provided to you. It hinges a little bit on the distinction between a corporation and an association. 501c3 nonprofits are corporations, but they are also defined as associations. And so we don't want to be separated out from any other corporation that can just report this as a lobbying expenditure. We want to be included with them as those that report all expenditures in the legislative session as lobbying.
Representative Hilty. Any other questions? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Abner, you know I've talked nonprofit for a number of years because of my personal association through your association. Here's my question. There are 501c3s whose specific intent is to lobby.
No.
And we need to clarify that because it comes to my attention that this has come out of a correct interpretation by the campaign finance board over an issue a couple of years ago where some substantial sums of money were used. I do believe that the campaign finance board is in attendance in the room, and maybe they could speak to that, because I think they may be here to defend their fiduciary responsibilities in having brought this up, so that we understand the impact of how this gets affected.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, thank you for that question, because I think that question gets to the core of part of the problem. 501c3s are granted their status as purely public charities with a limitation on their lobbying, and they will never get 501c3 status if their primary purpose is advocacy, lobbying, or any form of political activity. The organizations that were involved in the complaint are 501c4 organizations. They are allowed to have PACs. They can more easily create political action funds. But the fact that this decision applies to all nonprofits puts 501c3s in a level of jeopardy that 501c4s do not experience. And the difference is those organizations that are deemed by the IRS to be providing a benefit to the community are entitled to the very familiar charitable deduction or credit in some states for donors' charitable giving, and they are also then very limited in what they are allowed to do in lobbying. Organizations that choose to be engaged in things like major campaigns as a primary part of their activity are deemed by the IRS to be 501c4 organizations. Their donors do not enjoy the tax benefits, nor do their organizations. They are allowed to have political action committees and political action funds. And so the distinction between C3 corporations and C4 organizations is important. And I see that we do have representatives from the Campaign Finance Board. I do not believe that there is any fear that the public would be denied any information because all expenditures still must be reported. It would just be more consistent with the way in which other corporations are treated, and it wouldn't create, frankly, the chilling effect on nonprofit activity or any jeopardy with IRS review of our financials. And I think that there is such strict ruling on the fact that 501c3 nonprofits may be engaged in absolutely no partisan activity that the very word political action fund really does chill the activity of organizations that have an important role to play in the public dialogue and that, in fact, have a right to participate in the public dialogue. Within the limits of their lobbying as C3 organizations.
Representative Peterson, I'd like to see if you have another question for Ms. Abner?
I just might.
Because I do want to bring in public testimony after we're done questioning Ms.
Abner. I think that would be the next step, Mr. Chairman, because I think that is an important distinction, and I think the Campaign Finance Board ought to have a chance to just react to that, because, again, what they did under the context of when they did it was the appropriate step. And if we're clearing that air, then their ability to log in would be great.
Okay, great. Thank you, Representative Peterson. Are there any more questions for Ms. Abner? None for right now. Then I'll ask if there's any public testimony, and particularly if the Campaign Finance Board would like to come down and say anything. I don't know if, Representative Peterson, if you have a specific question for representatives of the Campaign Finance Board.
No, I don't. I like to have them acknowledge the differentiations C3, C4, and if that relieves them from responsibility of having to track this. But I would like reaction from them, just so.
Thank you, Representative Peterson. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jean Olson, the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance and Public Disclosure Board. The board did issue findings last spring based on a complaint, and I appreciate Representative Peterson saying we applied the correct statute at the time. That's how the statute was written. I will try to clear up one thing that Ms. Abner said, is that it doesn't apply to just to not-for-profits. Any corporation that tried to impact a ballot question would be covered by the board's ruling also. This change would just say that lobbying activities are lobbying activities, and trying to get the question on the ballot is not a campaign activity. Perhaps then after it's once on the ballot, it becomes a campaign activity because it's done during an election cycle. The reason we worked with Ms. Abner to get the wording, because you didn't want to remove everything for this ballot question, because the other type of ballot question is a recall of a constitutional officer's. And to do that, you have to get signatures, and if you don't work through the legislature with that, so that isn't conceptually lobbying, and that would still be included in the campaign finance part. So we're only removing the lobbying, and lobbying activity is reported on lobbyist disbursement reports.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
I don't know if it's allowed to ask a hypothetical question, but let me try.
Oh, we get them all the time.
We won't make our answer.
Okay. Last year, there was a group called the Transportation Alliance. that was very interested in the ballot question that was on the ballot. Now, so under the way it's written now, any expenditure, I don't know if they're a 501c3 or 4, I don't know, but if they were to expend money and did expend money to get that question on the ballot, don't know that they did, but if they had done that, would this come into play where they wouldn't have to report? Or would they just somehow create a 501c4 by following the documents, throw $500,000 in there from wherever the resources come from, and create this entity that now gets under the radar? Hypothetical question, but it was a real issue last year, and it was the Transportation Alliance. I'm not taking their name into vain. That's just was an example.
Mrs. Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. Anybody that would have had to, under the current statute, if people were trying to influence getting the issue on the ballot, they would have had to make those expenditures from a political committee or fund,
right,
and they would have had to report them under their lobbyist stuff. What we're saying here now is, with this new statute, it would be that the lobbying activity to get it onto the ballot would be reported by the lobbyists. Lobbyists are registered. They would be reporting their expenditures on their legislative work to encourage the legislature to get it on the ballot or keep it from the ballot. Once the bill is passed, and then they're trying to influence the final outcome in November, then that activity is political committee or fund activity and must be done from an appropriate political committee and fund. Unlike your elections, in which you're prohibited from taking contributions from corporations, ballot questions may take from corporations, and so not-for-profit corporations or for-profit corporations may make expenditures on ballot questions once it's on the ballot. Well, during the lobbying efforts, too, but once it's on the ballot, those contributions aren't prohibited to ballot questions as they are to your campaign.
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I don't want to monopolize this, but again...
Well, you are Representative
I'm
Peterson.
Sorry. I'm sorry. And I'm all for the transparency, and I applaud this bill. But a corporation can make a donation. So a corporation, Ames Construction Company, could, in fact, throw $500,000 into a new 501c4 that would then be used, without reporting, to lobby those of us at the table to encourage us to get a ballot question on?
Mr. Chair,
maybe I'm lost in the woods, yeah. But...
Representative Peterson, we have a growing list of groups you seem to have a problem with here, but...
I'm using
Transportation Alliance and Ames are...
I'm probably libeling myself.
Richard Thomas is going to come in here and have words with you soon, I think. Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson. They would at that point, if they threw $500,000 into a pot and were paying somebody to lobby this issue, that person would have to register as a lobbyist and would have to report all the lobbyist disbursements. And if anybody gave them over $500 to the lobbying effort, they would have to name those people on the lobbyist report. So, yeah, they can do it, but there's still the reporting requirement. But it's the lobbying. I think that the point trying to be made here is that that's lobbying, that's not political activity. I don't think the board has a problem at all with the language of the bill.
Okay. I think Representative Emmer has a question. Representative Anderson?
Just to that point, Ms. Olson, if you could just clarify. But you're saying that this language change would then make it that once session is done, all that activity becomes political? I'm confused on that part. Can you explain that?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, yes, once it all becomes political, right now it's all political. Even the lobbying portion. So it seems to make some sense to divide out the lobbying portion from the campaign finance portion. It doesn't become campaign finance until it's passed. If it never gets out of the legislature, it's intuitively not campaign finance issues. It becomes a campaign finance issue once it's on the ballot.
So, excuse me, Representative Anderson, so what you're saying, Ms. Olson, is this only changes what happens up to the point in time it gets on the ballot.
Mr. Chair, you're correct.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kalin, and then we'll go back to Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Ms. Olson, just a clarifying question. All lobbying activities have to be reported through the board, is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kalin. Lobbying activities are reported through a lobbyist, and so the activity has to be at such a level that there's a lobbyist being paid at least $3,000 in a year, and then that lobbyist does report the expenditures of the entity for which they're registered.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
Just to thank you, Ms. Olson, and I apologize for leaving it as open-ended as I did, but all lobbying done by an employee or a contract of a 501c3 through a registered lobbyist, whether on a bill before the legislature or a ballot question, to a bill to present a ballot question before before the voters, is reported by that lobbyist to the board and is public information, correct?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's correct. If any expenditures are now, keeping in mind the lobbyist's salary isn't reported.
Correct.
But any of their expenditures on brochures or materials or whatever it is reported by the lobbyist.
I would just like to reassure this committee that, thank you, Mr. Chair, that, and Ms. Olson, correct me if I'm wrong, but that we are not taking any information and hiding it behind non-disclosure, that there will be the same amount of disclosure of activities and lobbying on bills that present ballot questions. They'll just be reported, all lobbying on ballot questions through professional lobbyists will be reported, correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative, that's an interesting question because what you need to have first is a registered lobbyist. You have somebody that has to meet the definition of lobbyist, and that, again, is $3,000 paid, or they spend $250 of their own money, or an association spends $50,000. You may lose a little disclosure on those types of entities who don't have a lobbyist registered for them and don't spend $50,000 on a question. Those type of people will not now be required to report because they don't meet the definition of lobbyist, and so they don't have to register a lobbyist. And then they could make minimal expenditures. But once they start paying a lobbyist, once they get somebody over here that they're paying, then all those expenditures are disclosed, yes.
Representative Kalin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The expenditures by non-registered lobbyists, by associations who come and spend a few hours here lobbying legislators on a statutory change rather than a constitutional question, a ballot question, the amount of disclosure would be no different between those two activities. They're still able to continue. Today they can come and speak with us about issues before the legislature that relate to their activities as a charitable organization.
Mr. Chair and Representative, yes, volunteers can always come and there's no prohibition. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr.
Representative Lemmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Olson, would you agree with me that the purpose of our campaign finance laws is transparency of influence? I mean, if I can put it in those terms, that's what Chapter 10 was drafted for, is to create some transparency so people can see who is attempting to influence the political process. Is that a fair statement?
Mr. Chair and Representative Emmer, yes. There are two distinct programs, though, in Chapter 10A. One is lobbying, and that's when you're trying to influence what the legislature does. And the other influence you're trying to do is who gets elected, and that's campaign finance activity. In many states, there are separate organizations that do those two activities. In Minnesota, they both happen to be under our purview, but they're not necessarily connected.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Olson. I understand that, and that's why I asked the question the way I did. They both are under your purview, the purview of the Campaign Finance Board. And what triggered the question that I wanted you to clear up is that you made an interesting statement about you think it might be appropriate to separate out professional lobbyists from this type of political activity. And maybe I misunderstood, and I can see that that made you a little uncomfortable, and I'm sorry for that, because I'm sure you'll clarify. But I want folks to understand that despite the good faith intention of this proposal, the hypothetical that Representative Peterson was giving earlier, that the issue that he's trying to get at, and in fact, contrary to what Representative Kalin, I think, thought at the beginning of his question and what he understands at the end, this does eliminate transparency of political activity. And frankly, it's not just every corporation. The way things are set up right now, sovereigns can be donating. This would, for instance, the hypothetical could be changed, Representative Peterson. You could now say that political activity prior to a question going on the ballot, for instance, do you want a state-run casino? The political activity could create 501c3s or c4s and could be putting money into that, and it would not be necessarily subject to public scrutiny as to that political activity to influence getting the ballot, the question on the ballot in the first place. And I think that's dangerous. I think, frankly, if you could change my mind, I'd appreciate it, but I think that's a dangerous precedent that we set by starting to actually take some of these out of the public eye.
Ms. Olson, would you like to touch that hypothetical with a 10-foot pole?
Do I have to?
No.
Emmer, I am not treating not-for-profit lobbyists any different from corporate lobbyists. It's activity that's being regulated, and the activity to influence the legislature, that's how you define lobbying. You're trying to influence legislative action. And that it takes legislative action to get most constitutional amendments on the ballot. The exception is the recall. Then it becomes political, and you can raise or spend money to influence elections, and the election portion of it is when you get to vote, when the general public gets to vote on the ballot question. It's on the ballot. That's why it's called a ballot question. It's on the ballot, as are your names. And so then it becomes political activity.
Representative Emmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Olson. I think since I already stepped into the bucket, I might as well put both feet in.
We expect nothing less, Representative.
And we don't even know each other. the example I gave,
mm-hmm.
Let's say that we've got a tribe that does not have a paid lobbyist here in St. Paul. Based on this, if this were enacted, that organization, that sovereign, could spend up to $50,000 to get an initiative on the ballot, and it wouldn't be necessarily reported. We wouldn't have to see that. Isn't that true?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Emery, yes.
Mr. Chair, and I think to the committee, that is the problem, is that, yes, we can split. I understand lobbyists from political activity, but it still involves influencing the process here in St. Paul. And I think especially in this day and age when there is so much suspicion and there's all kinds of things that are stated out in public that are not true on both sides, I think that, or on all sides, I should say, I think we need to have the scrutiny on all levels, whether it's a professional lobbyist or other political activity. People should know who's influencing the process.
Representative Anderson?
Ms. Olson, could you, now I've never looked at a lobbyist report, and I've looked at plenty of campaign finance reports, and I know that on the campaign finance reports, you really have to itemize where the money is spent. You have to do the for and against, I believe, and all of that kind of detail. So if a lobbyist group was spending money in a district, for example, would they be required to report the location of the money, or is it just a lump sum after this law would be changed? I mean, is it just the expenses that they had? Is it just, we spent X amount of money on office equipment, we spent X amount of money on paper and brochures, or how does that work?
Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Anderson. The statute doesn't change the reporting requirements at all. The reporting requirements for lobbyists right now require them to list totals that they spend on separate activities, lobbying materials, transportation, gifts. They just right now present a lump sum of all of those activities, broken down by activity, but they don't
there's no disclosure on who they paid, and lobbyists don't report their salaries, but this bill doesn't change any of that. That's current statute.
Okay, so under the current statute, they're not required to itemize on their lobbying activities, or I shouldn't say lobbying activities, whatever their activities are. X amount was spent on radio in Wilmer, Minnesota.
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, that's correct. They do not have to itemize that.
Okay. Well, that brings up a whole new concern for me, I guess. I guess when I look at this piece, I think of the former Senator Dean Johnson and all the groups that were involved in his political campaign. And I'm guessing those actions under this change in law would be considered lobbying then?
Ms. Olson.
Not, Mr. Chair, not if they're trying to influence the election.
No, they were doing ballot
Representative Anderson?
If they were doing strictly ballot question issues, and they just happened to be in the area. Or say, for example, I just asked Mike. He's always my example. Say, for example, that he said he voted against voted for the Twin Stadium. And say he had a group of Brooklyn Park residents that didn't like that he had taken that position during the legislative session, and so now they're lobbying during the political, or maybe prior to, actually during the legislative session, they're lobbying, trying to change his mind on that. That would not be considered political.
Ms. Olson.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. Representative Anderson. Political activity begins when you raise or spend in excess of $100 to influence elections. And so if you were trying to influence the representative's nomination or election, and you did that by lobbying, our statute calls it the purpose of it. The purpose of your expenditure is to influence their election, and it's done during the legislative session. That's campaign finance.
But they could,
Representative Anderson,
during the legislative session, they could put an ad in the newspaper or send out a flyer that says, you don't want to vote, don't vote yes on the Hennepin County or sales tax for the Twin Stadium. Encourage you to contact your state legislature. They're not saying that he specifically is opposed to their position, but they're saying that you need to contact him and express your views. That would be considered a lobbying activity, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, yes, that's lobbying.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Before we get to Representative Nelson, who has a question, is there anybody else, just for planning purposes here, who wishes to testify publicly for or against this bill? All right, Representative Nelson.
Thank you. I'm going to delve into the hypothetical, like Representative Peterson. My understanding, this came out of a letter that got sent to the legislatures regarding a rally in the Rotunda by a group, and another group protested, and that's what came about with this ruling. Am I correct in my assumption there?
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Olson.
We got a complaint filed against some entities that were trying to keep a measure off the ballot, I think it was, and they ended up spending, some of them spent in excess of $50,000, some did not. But at that point, then they were required to do it from a political committee, and they didn't know that. And it's, but the board applied the statute as it's written and said, yes, it should have been from a political committee. And it was cured then by them disclosing and registering a political committee and terminating the political committee. And but yes, that is the issue.
So, Representative Nelson, my hypothetical would be then, so then if the MCCL came out and right now, under the current law, sent us a letter talking about a rally that they were having out front of the Capitol, that would be considered a campaign finance contribution under the current law, and would they be in violation if they didn't report it?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson, are you talking about a ballot question?
A ballot question, yeah.
Okay. In your hypothetical, they have a lobbyist, so they would be reporting those expenditures.
As a lobbyist, but would it be a political contribution?
Ms. Olson.
Mr. Chair, a political contribution?
Well, would it be considered, would it be them sending that letter, again, inviting us to a rally, would that be considered a violation of this statute? As far as, because they have a lobbyist, but would that be considered political contribution or political lobbying or political ballot?
Mr. Chair and Representative, they would be reporting that as a lobbyist expenditure, and they would be reporting it from their political fund, which they have one of each.
Okay. I fear that these hypotheticals are really rolling downhill faster and faster, and Representative Peterson, I'm blaming you for getting that snowball started.
I just thought of another one. I was going to ask.
Oh, Representative Peterson, I'm not recognizing you.
I was going to ask.
Representative Peterson, Representative Kalin was next on the list. And then we are getting close to 9:30 here, so I would ask that we keep these last couple of questions short if we can, and then we'll get Representative Pulaski to make a final comment, and then let's take a vote on this so we can get to session. So, Representative Kalin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to try to pull up some of the tracks before the train gets rolling too fast here with Representative Peterson's hypothetical. There's been a lot of reference to establishing political committees or setting up 501c3s or c4s to do this work and so on. I just want to return to the crux of the problem to point out that there is rigorous oversight of 501c3s and 501c4s and increasingly of 527s by the Internal Revenue Service, by the IRS. And it is very difficult. 501c3s are very vigilant about maintaining their nonprofit status and maintaining their ability to be for the refund portion as well. It's very critical to the support and to their issue and to their organization. And it risks, I mean, anyone who has been told that they're going to be audited, the shiver, every organization works very hard and very vigorously to avoid that situation. It is not easy to set up and be granted that status. What we are doing is essentially freezing out important voices in the consideration of these discussions and requiring more and more barriers for them to overcome to participate in this activity at the legislature, in the vigorous discussion, and not adopting this change will actually continue to tilt the tables away from the people who are doing charitable work in our communities. And I'll just point out to the committee that yesterday, I think it was, the Federal Elections Commission levied their third largest fine in history, almost $1 million, $750,000, to an organization that did not register as an organization at the federal level. And I would just point out that we do not want to be encouraging folks to violate the laws and violate their status. We really want to be encouraging the dialogue and not discouraging it.
Thank you. Representative Peterson.
I had some question to the author about being dormied on the 18th fairway.
Wow.
We were dormied.
That would really be off track.
I guess the question is just to have the author, he's heard the discussion, and I know from talking with him, he really has a passion for transparency and doing something out of this committee this year that will open up the process. And I think that started with your bill, Representative Morgan. So my question to him was, before you clean my clock on the ninth green, log in on this thing.
Representative Peterson, thank you. Representative Plasky, would you like to have a final word here before we vote?
Mr. Chair, members, you've dealt with a number of hypotheticals, which could be resolved by the Campaign Finance Board should they occur. But we are not dealing with a hypothetical. We are dealing with the charitable organizations that were, in Representative Peterson's words, dormied here by a ruling, a correct ruling, I will add, by the Campaign Finance Board on expenditures. I think it would be a sad situation if we force nonprofits to become, in effect, campaign political organizations. And this would be the first step toward making them form a PAC and take that step. Your hypotheticals can be dealt with in rulings in the future. But right now, let's not put nonprofit organizations in the role of partisan activists. They are not. They do not want to be. So let's not have them take that risk. Let's protect them.
Okay. With that, then Representative Pulaski renews his motion that House File 1036 be sent to the General Register. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Motion prevails.
Members of the committee. Mr. Chair.
Representative Plasky, are there any final announcements?
Well, I'd like to make a, like to move the minutes.
Oh, thank you. Do we have a motion to approve the minutes? I did happen to take a look at the minutes, and I think there's a the date says the 21st, and it should be the 28th. But with that correction, do we have a motion to approve the minutes from Wednesday? Representative Nelson moves the minutes. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Minutes are approved from Wednesday the 28th, and meeting's adjourned.